We are your station, 88.9 KETR. Hello and welcome to The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. You may already be aware, but as a programming note, the President's Perspective now airs on the first Wednesday of each month at noon and again at 5 p.m. Of course, you can always find the program podcast at the new KETR.org. On today's program, we're going to meet the new Dean of the College of Science, Engineering, and Agriculture, Dr. Grady Blunt. We'll also talk briefly about the Joneses' recent trip to Boston and the latest on the at-home front. But first, we continue our multi-part discussion on the university's guiding principles, where we take a closer look at the motivation behind a specific tenet, in this case, student success. Welcome, Dr. Jones.
Thanks, Jared. It's good to be here. We've been doing this kind of occasional series on our guiding principles, and we've talked about diversity and stewardship. There's seven, and I just wanted to talk about one of the most important ones, and that is the principle having to do with student success. And if it's okay with you, let me just read from our guiding principles what this one is all about. Pursue and implement effective research-based strategies that provide all students the resources, support, and high-quality instruction they need to achieve their goal of earning a college degree. Well, that's pretty broad terms. When you think about it, that really strikes at the core of why we exist as a university. We are here to help students learn. You can't talk about teaching unless you're also talking about learning. And that's something that has been part of what we've done for 122 years. It's increasingly something that the state and the federal government are looking at. We have to demonstrate learning outcomes for our students. We have to be able to measure that the time they have spent here has made a difference, that they leave knowing more than when they came, and specifically, how do we demonstrate that? So it's a key component of what we do, and it's a key component of the way that we demonstrate the value of what we do to the people we serve, right? Taxpayers and citizens of the state of Texas, and of course, our students and families. So I'm very pleased to welcome, as our guest for this segment, Dr. Mary Hendricks, whose title is Vice President for Student Access and Success. And as you can see from the title, student success is right in the middle the reason that her division exists. So, Mary, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here this morning.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Division of Student Access and Success? And maybe you could just sort of fill us in on some of the specific things that go on in that division that help students be successful.
I'd be glad to. As you know, our division was actually created in January of 2009, and it's a very unique model. And thank goodness for Dr. Jones' vision in really addressing what are the key essential elements for higher education. One, of course, is access and making us accessible to students, particularly those students in our region. But once they get here, how do we assure that we're providing them opportunities for success? And in looking at our model, of course, it has the traditional undergraduate admissions, financial aid and scholarships. What we've done is really craft a support system, particularly for new students. They are assigned a success coach, much more than a traditional advisor, an expert in all the policies and regulations, and if you make this decision, what are the consequences, so that students really have a good foundation when they arrive. We also have University College, which is really designated for the first-year students' experience, looking at how do we help students transition from high school to a university, and how do we help them transition from a community college to our university. The research tells us that most students may be academically prepared, but it is the rigor and suddenly being on their own and responsible for time management and balancing work and families and really helping academics come to the forefront is the challenge. So we have those components. We have testing, student mm-hmm. assessment. We also have the campus life and student development, totally integrating the concept of residential living and learning, looking at how we engage students, keep them involved in activities. We also have the Honors College, and the Regent Scholars Programs are in our division, and that is really beneficial because not only are those students setting the standard for how do you be successful in a university, they're also providing service. For example, yesterday we had a representative here from Woodrow Wilson High School, a recent partnership. Our Honors College students are actually going to be tutoring their students. So we're actually closing that gap to how do we as a university go back and help high schools prepare students to be ready for college.
I think one of the things worth pointing out, too, here on this campus is the fact that most of those services that we're talking about in terms of student access are all now in one centralized location,
right.
The Student Access and Success Center, which is something I think was a big step forward because there was a time in the past when a person wanted to be a student and had the wherewithal to be a student, but there was a trip here and then a trip there. And while we do have a nice rural setting and it's relatively small, it can be a lot when you're on foot and everything is across campus. And
right.
So, but now everything is kind of in one centralized location, which is, you have a neat facility. It's a really neat way to go to one place and find nearly everything you need.
I can't tell you how helpful that facility has been for students. We jokingly say students used to come and we would send them all across campus and eventually they would just get in their cars and go home,
right.
because
right.
they became very tired of the runaround. We're able to really address students' individual problems immediately and find the people to help those solve those problems.
Right. And of course, being in the business of higher education it's a business, and when you have a business and you need support or you need customer service or you're interested, you need to be able to talk to a person. And mm-hmm. I think that's one major improvement, and something that we like to underscore here is that you can always talk to a person, and that that personalized experience that you get with a success coach, I think that's going to set A&M Commerce apart from other institutions. I'm not sure however many other institutions might do that, but certainly it speaks wholly to student success.
Yeah, and we are getting a good reputation as, you know, the university that cares,
right.
The university that listens to its students, responds to their concerns. There are staff members in Dr. Hendricks's area that have the title Student Solution Specialist, and to me that says it all.
Right.
You know, if you have a problem and you are in need of a solution, that's who you go see. And the beauty of it is that they don't even have to know exactly what their problem is, only that something is not going right.
Right.
And they do have a problem, and they'll go there and they'll get help. Sometimes it's just a matter of connecting them with the right resource. Sometimes it's a matter of some tutorials or some counseling. Or usually, I think in more cases than not, it's just information. You know, getting the right information to them at the right time. And, you know, little problems caught early can be solved and they move on.
Talk for a minute about accessibility and the removing of obstacles to an education and ways that that relates to individual success post-college.
You know, what we're talking about is giving students the skills they need to be determiners of their own destiny. One of the terms that you hear in sociology and psychology is self-efficacy. And it's different than self-respect or self-image. Self-efficacy basically refers to that ability, to oversimplify it a bit, basically to take care of your own business,
right.
And get things done,
right.
And to set a course, chart a course, and then carry through with it. It's instilling in students that sense of being able to do what needs to be done on behalf of themselves.
I had a professor, this is a quick anecdote here, one that shaped, I think, my career in broadcast, but certainly in other aspects, who had a phrase that he would always say, and I don't think he intended to ever run anybody off with it, but no matter what your question, he would say, look it up, sap. But that speaks to, I think, a conversation we had before, learning to learn. That's what you're...
Learning to learn, right.
You're in college to learn how to find the answer.
Right.
Because it does. It poses all kinds of new things. You talk about time management. It may be possible for a person to transition from high school to the workplace and have a handle on time management. But when you go to college, there are some new and different things, you know, that could encroach on your time.
Right.
And so time management is something that ought to come along with that. And so being a successful student and hopefully in turn a successful and contributing member to society,
right.
Requires that these skills be picked up. And they're not really in the classroom.
Most of the predictors of student success are found outside of the classroom. You know, we talk about recruitment or retention and so forth. It's really engagement that we're talking about. How do we get students to engage in the whole enterprise? And that's exactly what the Division of Student Access and Success is all about. You know, and this is kind of a different model. It's not a brand new model. We're basically picking and choosing best practices, things that we see from research, things that we've seen in demonstration in other places. But it's demystifying the college experience. You know, I've spent most of my adult life and a healthy portion of my adolescence in institutions of higher education, so they're no longer mysterious places to me. But I was just looking at some recent statistics, and it's over 58%, close to 60% of our students are still what we call first generation, first in their family to attend college. So these are students who do not have a college-going mindset, and college is a mysterious place to them. So when they can go to the one-stop shop, and we try to take the mystery out of it. And in doing so, we're giving them the skills that they need to be successful.
And Dr. Hendricks, I'm sure you're hearing from students who have had some experience with your division and who have gone on to do some positive things.
Absolutely. What students tell us is, particularly those coming from our small rural high schools and those coming from smaller community colleges, we're a big fish in a small sea to them, and they're so frightened about coming here and what that experience entails, and having someone who cares and a smiling face and someone saying, I'm here for you, really makes a difference.
Student access in terms of a guiding principle is firing on all cylinders, it sounds like.
Well, that's our hope. That reminds me of a story. I was talking to a friend just this morning who came here as a student from Bonham High School. You know, Bonham High School, everybody knows everybody.
Right.
The teachers know all the parents. You know, there's no secrets. He came here, and his first semester, he was in a large class, and he was amazed that at that time they didn't take roll. He thought, this is great. I don't have to come.
Right. Sure. Sure.
Well, then at the end of the semester, he took his final exam, and he realized, oh, wait a minute, I do need to come. So the goal of what we're doing to support student success is to demonstrate to students that they do need to show up sometime before the final exam in the first, you know, in December. And again, it's a little thing, but it's just one of those teaching students how to learn, learning how to learn.
Dr. Hendricks, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right. When we come back, Dr. Jones introduces another new face on campus. Plus, we might learn a little bit about a conference for university presidents. You're listening to The President's Perspective only on your station, 88.9 KETR. Hey, it's Jared Knight, General Manager at KETR, and I tell you what, I'm not just an employee here at KETR. I also listen to it. I learn a lot each and every day from KETR, and I know that I wouldn't know near enough about the world if it weren't for the attention that I pay to Morning Edition and All Things Considered each and every day. If you appreciate those types of programs or any of our local news or weather or sports or music entertainment programming, you should make a gift of support right now at KETR.org/support. And thank you. Welcome back to The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. Dr. Jones, recently the university underwent an overhaul in terms of the organization of its colleges. I know that I graduated from the College of Arts and Sciences, but that college is no more.
That's correct, Jared. This was a process that started, actually the planning for it started 2 years ago or more. Mm-hmm. We formerly had the College of Arts and Sciences, College of Education and Human Services, and the College of Business and Technology. And just to recap very briefly, the College of Arts and Sciences dwarfed the other two. It was more than twice as large as the other two colleges. We did some research on our peer institutions around the state and the region and found out that it was probably the largest college outside of College Station in the entire A&M system. It wasn't an efficient organization, I guess. So we did a study. We consulted with deans, department heads, faculty, and decided that a reorganization was in order. So we tinkered with the other two colleges a little bit. We took technology out of the College of Business, moved it into a new college. But the two new colleges that we now have are the College of Science, Engineering, and Agriculture, whose new dean we'll welcome in just a moment, and the College of Humanities, Social Sciences, and Arts. So we recruited two new deans. We were fortunate to find for the deanship of the Humanities, Social Sciences, and Arts College, the best candidate was already here, Dr. Salvatore Attardo, and he is now the dean of that college. And our new dean of the College of Science, Engineering, and Agriculture is Dr. Grady Blunt, who joins us today. Welcome, Grady.
Howdy.
Grady comes to us from, he's new to the Texas A&M Commerce, but not new to the A&M system. So, Grady, can you sort of trace the long and dusty road that led you to Commerce?
Well, I was one of those first-generation students you were talking about in the first part of your segment here today. And Corpus Christi is my hometown, and I didn't know college was even an option. That was so far off the radar screen in South Texas. Well, you used to work in South Texas, so you know all about that. But I worked for 10 years in the broadcasting business, and a really special event happened to me. I ended up, during the first space shuttle launch, interviewing John Young and Bob Crippen, and I got so inspired by that interview that I said, I'm going to go get a degree in science. And I did. Mm-hmm. And, it was a long and dusty road. It went from Corpus Christi to Alpine to El Paso to Arizona to North Dakota and then back to Corpus Christi, where I was at A&M Corpus Christi for 13 years.
Uh-huh.
And then went out to Angelo State in West Texas for 5 years. And then I saw this come open. And, you know, I don't know how many people realize this, but when you're not at A&M Commerce, when you're sitting out there elsewhere in the system and in the state, everyone's talking about what A&M Commerce is doing. And so when I saw this come open, I was all over it.
So what is it that attracted you to A&M Commerce?
Well, you know, I've told people often since I got here that the people in commerce get more work done in a day than most people get done in a week. And it's, you know, it's not a joke. I mean, this is an outfit that's going places. The students are working hard. The faculty are working hard. The administrators are even working hard. I mean, there is a lot going on here. I was talking to a friend last week, and they said, well, so how's it going up at Commerce? I said, I got the buzz. And she knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah. Well, it is a hard-working place, and it's a busy place. And actually, we hear that back from employers who hire our graduates. And one of the things they tell us is the thing that makes our graduates special is their work ethic.
Oh, yeah.
They come prepared to do a day's work, and they roll up their sleeves and As we say here in East Texas, they get her done.
That's right. You know, and I don't know how the old college was functioning. I mean, that was, you mentioned it was huge.
Yeah.
And the new college, we call it COSE, College of Science, Engineering, and Ag, is more than enough to keep anyone busy for about 19 days a week.
Right.
So I think it was a really good move.
Now, you're the founding dean of this new college. You'll be remembered as the person who kind of laid the foundation and gave the college an identity and a vision. What are some of the things that you found when you got here in terms of the potential for this college to develop and move forward?
You know, the potential comes from the mission, and the hardest thing when you're starting any new organization is to figure out where we're going,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the mission comes in. So the very first thing we talked about when I got here was, okay, this is like the dog caught the car. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so you've got this college. Who are we, and what is it you want to do, and where do you want to go? And that's not the kind of question that someone can just say, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of thought, and I think people are still thinking about it and still understanding their role in not just A&M Commerce but in modern society. I like to think back a lot, okay, and say, what were scientists and engineers doing 100 years ago?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And look at what they're doing today. Because the reason I'd like to think back on that is the students that we're educating today are going to go out into that world. And we're going to have to teach them, you said earlier, learn to learn.
Right.
We're going to have to teach them the tools they need to survive, not in 4 years, but in 40 years.
Right.
And predicting anything about the future 40 years from now,
Or 4 years from now.
Or 4 years from now. It's a big task.
Yeah, one of the truisms, and I hear it every conference I go to, is we are teaching students to be employable in jobs that don't exist yet.
That's right. They don't exist, but we've got to try and figure out what it is. One of the big differences, I think, and people think of science and they think of math, and I think almost everybody has come out of this background where math means you sit down and you memorize stuff.
Right.
And maybe you understand it, maybe you don't. Well, we're getting away from that. I mean, the world that we're living in today is not about memorizing anything. Information is everywhere.
Right.
And so that's changing our whole perspective as scientists and engineers and mathematicians. That's changing our whole perspective about what is it that's important. And in this case, you know, Albert Einstein said, never memorize anything you can look up.
Right.
But the end of the sentence was, but you have to know where to look it up.
Right, exactly.
And so that's, you know, we're in a situation right now, and this is probably the biggest challenge in our business. We're in a situation right now where we're drowning in data. We have got so much happening in the science and technology areas. It's like a tidal wave.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a handle on that is probably the biggest challenge we've got. And that's actually where computer science comes to the fore with things like information technology and extracting meaning from this data. I mean, we're just, let me put it this way. Everyone knows what a terabyte is. You get those terabyte hard drives and, you know, big,
right,
nice computer and everything. When I first started teaching, there was not a terabyte of data on the entire planet.
Right.
And I'm not that old.
Right.
And we generate now on Earth about 3 terabytes of new data a day.
That's just incredible.
How do you go through it all? Where do you extract the meaning from it? And when you're talking about training someone and educating someone who's going to live in this hyper-information world 10 and 15 and 20 years from now, they've got to know how to extract meaning.
Right.
Because otherwise they're toast.
Right, right. Well, and it really, this strikes to the heart of what faculty members do in the classroom. You know, when I was in college, the faculty member was the source of the knowledge, the source of the content. So you went to class in order to listen and take notes because the faculty member was telling you stuff that you couldn't get any other way. Now, you open up your laptop or you turn on your iPad or whatever it is, the information is everywhere. It's freely available. It is free, most of it, mm-hmm, almost all of it, in fact. And that represents kind of a radical reformulation of the nature of teaching and learning. I don't have to sign up for physics with Grady Blunt to learn, you know, knowledge about physics. I can just go to Google and get the answer.
Right.
But what am I going to do with that information? How am I going to develop it? How am I going to apply it?
What do you do? And this gets back to the dog caught the car thing again.
Right.
What are you going to do with it? And there are people looking right now at 20, 30 years out into the future, wondering what's going to happen with education as we know it, because education as we know it is gone. And,
right,
you know, even Jared, you're a,
mm-hmm,
young guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone.
Right.
The world that the kids today are learning in is this hyper-information world. And, you know, you're right. It's not that the information's there or not there. It's what do you do with it? How do you extract,
right,
meaning from it? And that's a whole new teaching challenge.
Right, right. An exciting one at the same time.
It is.
Let me ask you real quick before we run out of time, just on a personal note, family, hobbies. I know you've got an interesting agricultural hobby perhaps you can tell us about.
Well, I raise miniature donkeys.
Right.
So I got started raising donkeys about 15 years ago because I had some property and I found out that if I produced something on that property, I could get an ag exemption on my,
right,
taxes.
Yeah.
Which one of the nice things about Texas. And so I started raising donkeys. Well, I didn't realize there's a huge market. People buy donkeys for guard animals. They're very aggressive.
Really?
Yes. Now, of course, a full-size donkey is almost as big as a horse.
Right.
A miniature donkey, I decided, is a little bit more doable. They're about the size of a St. Bernard. but they're wonderful little animals. Brilliant. Very, very smart. But that's where the stubborn part of stubborn as a mule comes from, is the donkey
it's
side
the donkey
of the family
half, huh?
tree. Right.
So you've got a little plot of land here somewhere around Commerce?
We're moving out to Scattered Branch, which is west of town.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, one of the things that is so neat about Commerce, I mean, this is like a Chamber of Commerce brochure, but you're an hour from downtown Dallas.
Right.
And yet you sit here in Commerce and you can pretend you're 200 miles away from anything.
That's right.
And I like that solitude.
Yeah, yeah. It grows on you. We love it for the same reason.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Grady Blunt, welcome. Glad to have you as part of the A&M Commerce family.
Thank you.
And as we wrap up today, I wanted to quickly ask you, Dr. Jones, about your recent trip to Boston.
Yeah, Jared, that was last week. It was the winter meeting of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities, and this was kind of their national president's meeting, and the spouses come along. There are programs for presidents and programs for spouses. So Jelena and I both went up to Boston. We just had a marvelous time. Great conference, tremendous speakers, very thought-provoking. And also the opportunity to network with some of my peers and colleagues. you know, being a president is a little different kind of a job than other jobs on campus. I've had most of the other jobs on one campus or another,
right?
In the sense that you don't really have a peer. You know, I mean, obviously
by design, right?
By design, right? I mean, that's just the way the organization structure works. You have people above you and people below you, but you're just sort of in that at that point in the org chart, more or less by yourself. So it's always a great opportunity to just kind of compare notes with other presidents and kind of let your hair down and just talk about concerns, because there are concerns that that all of us face. Obviously, budget is a big concern that throughout the nation we're all dealing with that. So right. We talk about different strategies for handling that. The spouse programs are wonderful because it really, I mean, it's a team effort. You know, Jelena and I do this job together.
Right.
And so she gets the opportunity to share some ideas. And, of course, being in Boston, it's great. You know, what a beautiful, historic city. We managed to sneak off one afternoon and went to the original Cheers pub on Beacon Street.
Yes.
Sat in the seat that Norm sat in. So
supposedly. Sure.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
Right.
If ever he visited, that's where he was.
If ever he visited, right, yeah. And the other historic thing we got to do was we went to a restaurant called the Union Oyster House, mm-hmm. which bills itself as the oldest continuously operating restaurant in America. Well, I have no reason to doubt that. I'm just going to take it at face value.
I think you'd have to cut a post in half and count the rings anyway.
Right, exactly. But the neat part about the evening is that we were seated at the very table that John F. Kennedy used to sit at when he went to eat there. And they have a little plaque and a little, you know, an American flag and a little presidential seal and all that.
Sure.
And it was just a lot of fun sitting there. Now, the other interesting thing was throughout dinner, people kept walking by and taking pictures and say, oh, don't mind us. You know, we just want to take a picture of the plaque. Can you scoot back a little bit so we don't see you?
Right. Right. But since you're there, how are the potatoes?
Yeah, right. So anyway, so we came back from that, just kind of rested and refreshed and rejuvenated.
Right.
Glad to be back in Commerce.
Big plans for Thanksgiving?
Well, we'll have the annual gathering of the Thanksgiving for the Thanksgiving feast. All of my wife's family comes up here from Houston, and yeah, it's a tremendous gathering, and my brother-in-law and I are going to try and sneak off and play a round or two of golf, and we're just praying for good weather. Regardless, it's a great time just to kind of reconnect and re-engage and remember what the most important thing in life is, and that's being around your family.
Right. Well, we'll have to do this again next month.
Looking forward to it. I want to wish all of our listeners a safe and happy Thanksgiving, and look forward to visiting with them again in December.
This has been the November 2011 edition of The President's Perspective here on your station, 88.9 KETR, originating from the campus of Texas A&M University Commerce. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Mary Hendricks and Dr. Grady Blunt, and of course to you, Dr. Jones.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Jared.
This program can be found archived at the new KETR.org. You can now mouse over local programs and click The President's Perspective for the latest. KETR is listener-supported radio for Northeast Texas. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.